And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive, off and running, hour number four, here on a Monday. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you. The big finish coming up at 9:45 this morning. We'll talk to Aaron Suttles, who covers Alabama for The Athletic, also for Jox FM in Birmingham. We'll get to him in a couple of moments once we connect to him. But that to me is a fascinating story with the whole Enos thing. We talked about that, and we'll talk about that with him in a couple of moments. But I feel like one of the things that is, you go into this college offseason, and I think we're going to come out of it talking about this is one of the most exciting offseasons we've ever had in college football, from quarterbacks transferring to big-time programs, the coaching carousel. It just feels like, to me, since college football has ended, it's been really filled with drama.
So I think certainly coaching carousel has been a part of that, even though there weren't a lot of big jobs that were open this year. I do find it, the quarterback transferring thing is interesting because it does seem to polarize people, because we sort of just live in a free agent world now when it comes to quarterbacks in college football. And we see Lincoln Riley, right, take a lot of heat at Oklahoma for not allowing Austin Kendall to transfer to West Virginia while accepting a transfer quarterback. Like, it's just so bizarre. You recruit one kid, he comes to your campus, and then you're like, well, I don't think he's good enough, I'm going to take Jalen Hurts. And then he transfers and you block him, and then the exact same story plays out, right? The fans and media get up in arms like, dude, why are you being selfish? Then the coach says, okay, fine, I'll let you transfer. It's the same story, happens every single time. But look, Kelly Bryant's at Missouri, right? You got, by the way, five-star Hunter Johnson is going to start this year at Northwestern, formerly of Clemson. You got five-star former Georgia Bulldog Jacob Eason that's going to start at Washington this year. Shea Patterson is a transfer at Michigan. They're a preseason top 10 team. Justin Fields is a transfer at Ohio State. Look at this. You start looking at the top 10, and almost everybody's got a transfer quarterback with the exception of Trevor Lawrence, Jake Fromm, and Tua Tagovailoa. Now, what do those three teams have in common? They're probably the best three teams in America. I find it interesting. Can we spin this transferring thing? Some people will call it an epidemic, but can we spin it into an exciting thing? Can we make it a positive for the sport?
I love it. It's free agency.
It's free agency. That's all it is. It's creeping closer and closer to the NFL. The coaches moving, coaches getting big contracts, the drama, playoffs. Now quarterbacks are transferring and hitting the free agent market. Jalen Hurts' dad, or was it his uncle, said he's going to be the biggest free agent, you know, this offseason. And frankly, he was one of the biggest free agents this offseason for college football. He, along with Justin Fields and a few others. So this thing is creeping closer and closer to professional sports, if it's not already professional. It's professional sports.
NFL free agency in March, NBA free agency in July. Uh-huh. I mean, the NFL and the NBA are the two most highly rated sports. Mm-hmm. And beyond the actual games, free agency is must watch.
Well, you're going to see more and more of this.
In the NBA, it's more popular in the offseason than the regular season.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the NFL's not that. Right. The NFL is still far more popular.
And the draft is still bigger than
Games are still more important. But the NBA, it's like the finals end, and everyone's like, oh, I'm ready now for fun to begin. And I'm like, wait a second, your season just ended.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't care.
Think about this. Now, let me. I saw this graphic from the Feinbaum Show. Notable quarterback transfers. Which transfer will have the biggest impact? Now, there's about seven of them. Kelly Bryant to Missouri, Justin Fields to Ohio State, Jalen Hurts to Oklahoma, Tate Martell to Miami, Brandon Wimbush to UCF, Justin Kendall to West Virginia,
Austin Kendall,
or even a guy from last year, Jacob Eason, who's now eligible at Washington.
Yeah, and like I said, Hunter Johnson as well, five-star quarterback at Northwestern, changes the dynamic of the Big Ten West. I mean, listen, this is just the world we live in, folks. You just got to be prepared and used to. And I think you have the right attitude, Nick and Derek, to embrace that this is just the new landscape of the way things go. And I think a lot of those guys are going to play huge roles. I don't think Tate Martell is all that good. I think Miami's in a really rough spot right now. They didn't recruit all that well this year. I think Miami's teetering on the brink of something. I don't know what. But I think Missouri's relevant in 2019 because of Kelly Bryant. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they lose Drew Lock and they bounce right back and get a guy like Kelly Bryant.
All right, let's welcome in Aaron Suttles, covers the Alabama Crimson Tide for The Athletic, also midday host on Jocks FM in Birmingham. Aaron, we appreciate a couple of minutes. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We'll get to the Dan Enos situation in a moment, but I want to get your perspective on this conversation we were just having. The year of the transfer in college football, are you a fan of the, quote, free agency of the sport now? And also, secondly, of all the quarterbacks that have transferred, who do you think is going to have the biggest impact next year?
Wow, great questions. I'm not in favor of free agency, but I am in favor of players having options. And I think it's good overall that players have more freedom now because they've been – I don't want to say they've been held down, but they've been at a disadvantage in terms of their own freedom and what they wanted to do in the past. I think it's dangerous of the situation we're in now where people are just transferring left and right and with the possibility of playing immediately, like Justin Fields at Ohio State or Tate Martell at Miami. But the guy who's probably in the best position is Jalen Hurts. He's going to work with a really bright, innovative offensive mind who's just produced the last two Heisman Trophy winners. So you've got a guy that started a lot of big football games, has a ton of experience, and now you're putting him together with a guy who's developed two Heisman Trophy winners in a conference where you can wing it around. So I'd be hard-pressed to come up with anyone other than Jalen Hurts at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd argue Fields at Ohio State, should he play, and they are a playoff team. You could maybe throw them in the mix as well. Let me ask you about coaching attrition, though, because I feel like this question is the same one we ask about Alabama and Nick Saban every year, and I don't know if it finally caught up to him this year because I felt like Mike Locksley is the only guy that was like the weak link of all the coaching staffs, and Clemson certainly has built a coaching staff that is as stable as it possibly gets. How do you quantify the revolving door at Alabama? Is it quantifiable? Has it had an impact? How much do you give stock to that aspect of Nick Saban's coaching tenure right now, currently?
Well, I think it's one of the more remarkable things about Nick Saban is that he doesn't shy away from attrition. In fact, he kind of goes the opposite way. He embraces it because it enables him to bring in new ideas. It enables him to basically avoid being complacent. You know, there would be so many people that have had success, and we've seen it in our personal lives, or if we've had success doing something in particular, we study it, right? That's what we do as humans. We study it. How do I replicate that? And often that is, well, I've had success doing X, Y, Z, so I'm going to continue doing X, Y, and Z. Well, football is a copycat league, and people will catch on to X, Y, and Z. So you have to evolve to get ABC. And that's what Nick Saban's done. I mean, when he had these big, physically imposing teams, and Johnny Manziel rolls into Tuscaloosa in 2012 and gives his defense fits, Nick Saban changed. And think about that. He had just won two national championships in a row after 11-12, and then completely just evolved the way he recruits defense to get smaller, to get faster. And so some of that's that. But it takes a huge impact. Take what Tennessee has done, for instance. Not only did Tennessee come in to take Alabama's defensive coordinator in Jeremy Pruitt, they took a valuable defensive assistant in Brian Niedermeyer. And so you're not only losing, this is what people lose track of because it's harder to keep count. You're not only losing on-the-field assistants, you're losing guys in the back that you don't see that are doing work, that have learned, that may have been in other situations the guys you promote. And so you're losing not only your front line, you're losing your back end potential talent too. So that's why you've seen Nick Saban have to go to Texas, San Antonio to get a coach. So Nick Saban's having to kind of branch away from his coaching tree. So he embraces it. He doesn't think it's a bad thing, but I think at a certain point it has to catch up to you a little bit. And it hasn't on the field yet for Alabama. So that's even more remarkable in what Nick Saban's built.
I don't think it'll ever catch up. Well, at least not for the foreseeable future. It'll ever catch up on the field because of the kids they recruit each and every year, them, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State. But I know you cover Alabama, but isn't it eerily, doesn't it have a a crazy resemblance of how his career and Belichick's career has gone. Both coaches, each and every year, seems like they're replacing their assistants. And I think Nick can deal with it a little bit better because he employs 100 other assistants on staff that he can eventually promote, you know, within the building. Now, he might go outside of the building every once in a while, but he has so many coaches that, you know, if a guy does leave, you know, you've had a coach that had been sitting there 2 or 3 years that knows the system. He just promotes them from within.
Yeah, we've seen a little bit of that. But mainly, there haven't been a ton of promotions from within directly. Now, he prefers those guys go somewhere else and get some experience, unless it's a Locksley or a Tosh LePoy. In that case, yeah, absolutely. Now, you've got Tosh LePoy, who was an intern, who came in when you had a position come open, you promoted him, or Mike Locksley, or you know Steve Sarkisian, even for that one game. So there's been a few, but they've just been hit. Guys, last year they had 6 coaching turnovers. They're going to have more this year. I mean, you're looking at 70% of your coaching staff on the field changing over after you've only lost 1 game all season. And it's kind of remarkable. But as you mentioned, everyone keeps wondering when it's going to catch up to them. And is Alabama vulnerable? And I get that conversation. I completely understand it. But they have the number one recruiting class in the country this year. So, and that's kind of even more remarkable to me. How do you lose your staff that have built all these relationships since kids were freshmen, sophomores in high school? You lose those coaches, and you're still able to hang on to them and sign them. So it says a lot about Nick Saban's ability to recruit.
Aaron, final question for you. We appreciate a couple of minutes. How did the Dan Enos situation unravel? Did in fact he, from what you know, the people that you've spoken to, did he leave in an unprofessional way, or is that report off?
I don't want to say unprofessional. I wouldn't leave that way. If I was leaving a job, I hate to say this. I'm a man. I would go to my employer, turn in my notice, and leave. Dan Enos is. His assertion that he told his employer may be factually correct. He may have left a note for the athletic director or the president. He may have sent an email. But he did not tell Nick Saban he was leaving. He did not tell Greg Byrne he was leaving. He waited until everyone was out of the office in the middle of the night to clean out his desk. He was going to be sitting in on interviews to fill out offensive coaching staff the next day. He didn't show up. Nick Saban has to ask where he is. So is that unprofessional? Probably in the way that we look at things. Did he notify someone in some manner? Possibly. But he didn't tell his boss. He didn't tell Nick Saban directly or indirectly. There was no notice given to Nick Saban. So most of us, when we leave a job, we have to tell our direct superior, our direct report. And that did not happen with Dan Enos. And if you want to call that unprofessional, that's what it was. But his assertion that he told someone may be factually incorrect or factually correct, but he didn't tell Nick Saban.
Okay. Aaron Suttles covers Alabama for The Athletic, also for Jocks FM. We appreciate the time this morning, Aaron. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Take care.
You got it. Aaron Suttles joining us here on Morning Drive. We got the big finish coming up at 9:45, and we'll react to what he had to say. Coming up next, 615-737-1025 if you want to get in. Morning Drive, we roll on next here on ESPN 1025. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 1025. The game coming up at the bottom of the hour. One man is making a push here in Nashville. Details in just about 12 minutes. Quickly to react to what Aaron had to say. Well, it does look like Dean Imus.
You're giving Spartan alumni a bad name, man. Can't do that.
No doubt about it.
His quarterback for Michigan State back in early 90s.
Right.
No, it was late 80s.
Who?
Dan Enos. He was the Spartans quarterback in the late 80s.
Did you watch him as a kid?
Yeah, I did.
Look at you. Dropping some wisdom.
With Cedric Irvin?
Wisdom. I played with Cedric Irvin. No, he was there before Cedric Irvin.
No, who was the running back in like 87 that ran for like
2000? That was
Charles
Lorenzo.
White.
That was Lorenzo White.
Lorenzo White. I'm going to get the name
right.
You're
going to get it right.
Point.
Charles White.
I'm going to keep naming dudes.
Cedric Irvin.
Cycle Irvin.
Sonny Dykes. Jimmy Dykes.
Sonny Liston.
Michael Campanero. I'll get it right.
But quickly, so it does look like Enos left unprofessionally. And as Aaron said, you don't notify Nick Saban or the athletic director. That is remarkable.
I mean,
that'd be like us leaving this station, not telling the program director and the general manager, but we left the intern a note.
We send the intern an email.
You know what? That's a pretty good way to go out. Make the intern do your dirty work.
That is exactly.
I like that.
Or you can
weasel.
Just do it like this. Hey, guys, I'm leaving. I won't see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Bunch of weasels in this world.
I would just text you guys. I'm not feeling well for the next few years.
And then Nick Cale would respond with a bunch of other stuff like GIFs and, you know, Mike Francesa stuff, and none of us would get your message.
Yes, there you go.
My text would say something really serious, and then there'd be 36 text messages from Nick
Cale. And it gets pushed down.
All right, so we will obviously get into plenty of Super Bowl stuff, but my early feeling for the Super Bowl is, and there's many storylines, but the one that I am intrigued by the most, that I think will actually have the biggest impact on the game itself and is not media-driven hype to get clicks or to fill hours of content, the cerebral approach, Sean McVay offensively, Bill Belichick defensively. I am fascinated by the coaching matchup.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I thought the Belichick-Andy Reid cerebral chess match was really fascinating yesterday. As good a job as Belichick did in the first half, against the best offense in the NFL, they were exceptionally good on defense for the Patriots. And then to see Andy Reid make the adjustments in the second half, and Derek, you can maybe speak to what those were specifically, but you saw the Chiefs start to make adjustments and the offense started to come around, and Mahomes had a little bit more time to throw because he was under so much pressure early. I mean, Andy Reid is pretty stinking good from an offensive game plan standpoint. We know how good Belichick is. So, yeah, this will be a real true test of boy genius, right? I mean, listen, everybody's getting hired who's related to Sean McVay. You saw Sean McVay at a coffee shop, you get hired in the NFL. And we know about that. And now it's going to be out of control because he's actually in the Super Bowl now. But you're telling me if Jared Goff is going to beat Bill Belichick, it's going to have to be because Sean McVay did something special with the game plan, right? Like, this is as good a test for boy genius as we will ever see.
It's going to come down to Wade Phillips in that defense. It's not going to have anything to do with Sean McVay. Belichick has seen this. It's nothing Belichick hadn't seen. He went against the greatest offensive mind in football this past weekend, and Andy Reid. That's
pretty big statement.
Andy, if you just look at Andy and what his offense has been able to do.
I can't get past the mustache.
Yeah, he doesn't get the credit. And I know he doesn't get it because he hadn't won the Super Bowl. But, man, I would take him 100 times out of 100 as a head coach. His offensive gene, he's brilliant. And Belichick was able to corral that. You think he's going to have a problem with corralling or making it difficult for Sean McVay? No. That's why I say this game is going to be about Wade Phillips and what Wade Phillips can do against Tom Brady. Absolutely, because I would almost guarantee this. That Ram offense, they had trouble with New Orleans. They're going to have big trouble with New England. Yeah. Huge trouble.
Well, especially if Gurley's banged up.
And Gurley hadn't played well these playoffs. He just hadn't. And he might be still a little hurt. Belichick finds
a way. They said he wasn't hurt. Wasn't that weird?
Belichick finds a way. Belichick always finds a way to take out your number one guy. Tyreek Hill had one big – he made one impact play in that game. Why? Because he found a way to take him out.
He doubled him the entire game.
Kelce made one impact play. After that touchdown, they found a way – and he dropped a few passes, too. He didn't play his best game either. But they found a way to take Kelce out, too. Belichick has this brilliance about him. It's like Saban, Dabo – All wrapped in one. He has this brilliance about him that he makes it. He's always like one or two steps ahead of you. Yep. And then when you catch up, he takes another step.
And it's really mad. Like, what you have to do is you have to go back. And I agree with you. The game will be decided on the Rams defense. I agree with you. I'm fascinated, like you said, though, Nick, about the – I don't think it's overhyped to put Belichick's brain against McVay's brain and say, I can't wait to see that chess match. But I do think the game is decided, which is sort of a different conversation, but I do think the game is decided on the Rams' defensive side of the ball and how they approach Brady. Let's look at all the ways Tom Brady has been beaten in major championship setting, either AFC title game or Super Bowls. What do all of those teams have in common? Getting destroyed by the Denver Broncos, right, in the AFC championship game. Why?
Pressure.
Broncos defense. They lose to the Giants twice in the Super Bowl. Why?
Defense.
Defensive line.
Defensive front.
Yeah. Why do they lose to Seattle in the
Defensive
Super Bowl?
Front.
You know, or no, they beat,
no, they beat Seattle, but Seattle. It was tough.
Why do they struggle in these games? Where is it that they get beat? Why did Philly beat them last year? Now, I know Brady threw for like
Baltimore beat him in an AFC championship game.
Exactly. Why?
Defense.
Defense. So why do you – the only formula to beat Tom Brady is to have that great defensive
and that's
line.
Why I said
and the Rams have
Wade,
some of those dudes.
That's why I said it's Wade Phillips. This game is a Wade Phillips game. Wade Phillips now becomes the X factor in this game. He is the head coach because he has to find a way to devise a defense to stop Tom Brady, whether you do it up the middle or on the edge. This is where Ndamukong Suh, he must show up. He showed up last game, but he must show up big. Aaron Donald must show up huge. They must get that push up the middle because if they get push on, if they get edge rush, Tom doesn't care. He's going to step up in the pocket and release the ball. He doesn't – outside rush doesn't affect Tom Brady, okay? It's when the pressure comes up the middle on Tom Brady where he can't step up and he's forced to step side to side where he doesn't have good lateral movement. If they can get that push up front, if Wade Phillips can get that push up front, that's how Philly beat him. Get the push up the middle.
And a lot of guys. Exactly. Rotated a lot of guys.
If they can get that push up the middle, then they have a better shot at winning.
All right, coming up next, one man is making a push, and another guy that plays the sport believes it's a reality. Details on the other side here on Morning Drive.
People, I'm going to tell you about my good friends at Cool Springs MD. Men listeners out there, I know you made your New Year's resolution, and it should have been to go see Daphne and Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, along with their experienced staff. Give men the treatment, men in Brentwood, in the Nashville area, all around. Give them the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD has serviced men throughout the Nashville area with improvements to their immune system, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And there is no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle than now. Yes, I said now. So pick up that phone. What are you waiting for? And call my good friends at Cool Springs MD to make an appointment at 615-660-6900. That's 615-660-6900. Or visit their website at coolspringsmd.com.
This has turned into a big city and a big area, and people love baseball around here. People love baseball now. And, you know, I do think that what Coach Corbin has done at Vanderbilt has brought more excitement to the city, and then the Sounds getting a new stadium has brought more excitement, and the people are coming into Nashville. And, I mean, just from being here and growing up here my whole life, Nashville's never been more ready for a major league team than they are now. And it would be amazing to have a team here. I've been almost every big city in the country, and I'm still living right here in Nashville. It's not a place that I ever want to leave. And when you talk about cities, just you can be in Seattle, Washington, or you can be in California, or you can be in New York. And when you say the words Nashville, Tennessee, people kind of perk up and they say, I want to go there. It's where everyone wants to go, and people aren't just visiting here, they're moving here. And it's growth, and people are excited about baseball. Talking
baseball. That was Sonny Gray, Yankees pitcher, soon to be Cincinnati Reds pitcher, of course, from Smyrna, Tennessee.
Smyrna.
And he was.
How do you say it? Smyrna.
No, I think it's just Smyrna.
Smyrna. Smyrna.
Yeah,
Smyrna.
I don't think you need to put any extra stank on it.
Yeah, put some stank on Smyrna.
So,
Spring Hill.
Heating and cooling?
By the way, yes. Call the great folks.
Not the other guy.
Not using the other guys anymore. By the way, Sonny Gray, when he was like 13 years old, people were like coming out in droves to watch him pitch. He was one of those guys that everybody was like, that dude is
Heck of a QB, too.
Oh, my God. Dude was a high school superstar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. Now he's going to the Reds.
Yep.
Porth.
Yeah, Porth. I don't think Porth is overly happy about that, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Hey, if he has a resurgence, he's got great.
Exactly.
Decent pitcher. Local kid.
So he thinks Major League Baseball in Nashville would work. The Nashville Business Journal had a story late last week. A new-to-Nashville businessman by the name of John Loire, Music City Equity Group, who cites high-powered connections in sports and business, is spearheading an effort to bring a Major League Baseball team to Nashville. We've discussed this before. Where there's smoke, there's fire. I think I'm in the minority on this because I believe it would work here, and I think you guys, if I remember correctly, don't think we have the sustainability for 81 games here.
I mean,
well, let's let Nick make the case.
Okay, make your case why you think it is.
There's enough baseball fans in this market, whether you're a Braves fan, a Reds fan, a Cardinals fan, and I'm not saying that everybody would all of a sudden jump ship and become a fan of this team, but I think there's enough people that love baseball, and we have so many transplants in this city that they would go, and I'm not saying sell it out every night. But I think you could get 65-70% of a stadium filled up for baseball.
81 nights a year.
Exactly.
While they overlap with Preds games
and Titan games.
Concerts.
Well, nobody goes to Titans games anyway.
That's fair. And that's only eight games.
But now they don't.
Here's my question, though. So let's just compare it to the two pro teams here. The biggest difference between the two pro teams here is one of them was born here.
Yeah.
One of them came to a market where there were no preconceived fandoms. Most everybody just sort of adopted the Predators because they didn't already have a hockey team. Part of the Titans' struggle is that they weren't born here. We adopted them, and that everybody sort of in America grows up with a preconceived baseball or football fandom, right? Everybody grew up a certain fan of a certain team. Where does the baseball fan guy here in Nashville fit on that spectrum? Because that, I think, is critical to understand to the market. If most everybody would be more like Preds fans and it would unify the city, then I think it works. If you already have large chunks of Cubs fans, Braves fans, Reds fans, and Cardinals fans, which we have a ton of in this city, those are pretty deeply entrenched fandoms. I don't know if all of a sudden they would just flip and support a baseball
fan. Isn't baseball kind of like this, unless you're a diehard baseball guy, unless you're like Fenway Park, Red Sox, Yankees, all that. Isn't baseball kind of like a summer get-together where you show up to the park, you grab a hot dog, a couple of beers, you sit back for 7 of the 9 innings, and you just kind of take in the environment?
I think
it's more of a social event.
Yeah, but I think
it would
you
work.
You have to have it has to be more than just a game. It has to be, you have to make it a experience when you go to the ballpark. It just can't be, oh, we got a few things here, we got a few things here, and then go in and get your hot dog or brew and sit there and watch the game. It has to be more than just that, because it's 81 games, it's grueling, and it overlaps with football somewhat.
It's twice
it overlaps
as big as Bridgestone,
with hockey.
Think about that.
And then I know the Grizzlies are, you know, 3.5 hours away, but it's going to overlap with that as well. I just don't think in this market right now, maybe 10, 12, and then the infrastructure, man, they can barely deal with the traffic now. I mean, and then where are you going to put
the
team?
The sports calendar overlap, I think, works in baseball's favor because you're starting as the end of hockey is coming to a close. So you might get a couple of people opening day the first week, and then people focus, obviously, on the Preds. When that comes to a close, you transition to baseball, and you only stick with baseball in September if you're relevant. If not, you check out and you go to football.
So would it be a existing team or a new franchise?
I would prefer a new one, but I would take it either way.
I think the new one would work better because everybody could sort of unify around a new thing that's uniquely.
But then
ours,
you
got
to get used to players.
Sure, but here's my issue though with the calendar. I would agree with you on the calendar thing. But think about it. It's twice as big as Bridgestone Arena. You're going to need probably 35,000 is really small for baseball stadium. Part of the reason that MLS came here, we have a young, diverse collection of people, but it's only asking for 20 games at about 28,000 people. So you're only asking for 20 nights a year and less than 30,000 people. What you're asking for now is 20 nights a year for soccer, 8 or 10 nights a year for football, 40 nights a year for hockey, and now 80 nights a year for 40,000 people of baseball? That's hard to do.
I just don't think the city's big enough. I really don't. It's growing, yes, I get it. but I don't think it's at this point of time. Now, again, 10 years from now, somewhere around there, a little bit longer, yes, maybe. But they got to get the infrastructure right first. And then, honestly, and this is just me, I would rather have a basketball team in Nashville because I think it works from the standpoint of the facility. The arena is already built. It can house
and it was built for basketball.
Exactly. It can house a basketball team and a hockey team. So you don't have to build a separate structure for a basketball team.
So you think
let's compare basketball to baseball, right? Those two markets.
And it's indoor.
So you got to compare two, because the reason soccer works is they're projecting the market forward, uh-huh. right? They're projecting what does Nashville look like in 10 years, right? And that's a big part of this. What do we look like in 10 years? Ideally, we have a transportation system that works and functions and moves people around in a more efficient manner. Mm-hmm. We're certainly going to continue to attract businesses and massive corporations to bring jobs, population growth, economics, and money. But here's my question about the NBA. Is it popular enough amongst the right demographics? And I'm talking buying demographics, meaning old people. The NBA is far more popular with young people. They don't have the means necessarily to be buying 40-game season ticket passes to NBA teams, whereas all the people in their late 30s, 40s, and 50s have all the buying power to buy season tickets. Those people are more likely to be baseball fans.
I think it becomes a social event in basketball. They're gonna get the people to buy the suites. They're gonna get the people to buy the front row seat. I mean, you got enough musicians here,
there's a lot of
enough actors, so they're going to want to be seen. Well, so those seats are going to be sold,
like,
and then the boxes are going to be sold.
More than baseball.
You're going to have people, because whether you believe it or not, there is a big contingency of basketball fans here, but they just don't have a basketball team. Now, if they've come from Detroit, up from Detroit, then obviously the Pistons are their team. If they've come from out west, then obviously the Lakers are their team. If they've come from a different part of the country, they already have their team.
But if you're going
to
sit here,
they have nothing to root for here in the city.
Yeah, I get
so.
That. But if you're going to say that if the city's not big enough for baseball, and there's not enough people to go to, which would be, look, baseball would be about 75% standalone, because mm-hmm. hockey would be over early in your season for baseball. Mm-hmm. Football doesn't start till the end of your season. How can the city be big enough for another sport to go head-to-head with hockey? Because they run simultaneously.
Yes,
the
NHL
starts, 2 weeks before?
Yeah, they're basically overlap.
Right.
To me, it's about the age of the market and the buying power of the market. Mm-hmm. And the NBA is far more attractive for Nashville in 15 years. Nashville in 15 years, all those young people that are 24 right now who will be 40 in 15 mm-hmm. years, they're the ones that will have the money to buy, and they're the NBA fans. Baseball is not as popular with the young people that are buying stuff. That soccer is really – that's why the MLS is coming here, because soccer is extremely popular mm-hmm. with people under the age of 25, and they will then have buying power, and the tickets are so much more affordable. The stadium's smaller. That is why MLS fit that window so well. It's a smaller ask. It's a smaller amount of games, a smaller ticket price, a smaller venue, and it's a young demographic that mm-hmm. can afford to go do it. Baseball, you're asking an older generation of fan to spend a lot of money. Now, they have the money. That's the mm-hmm. difference. But in 15 or 20 years, the two things that will happen, the city will continue to get bigger, so we'll have a lot more people that can support a team. But the city then will get older. And who are the people in their prime at that time that are buying? And what are they interested in? Right now, the Buck Risings of the world are interested in soccer.
They don't
and the
care
NBA.
About anything, honestly. The Buck
right.
Risings of the world.
But it's the NBA. It's the NBA and it's soccer.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that the young people are interested in. And I don't know what Nashville looks like in 15 years. And I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a baseball guy. I would love it if they were here. I would take my kids. I don't know if I am representative of who's lives in the city right now. I don't know.
I would buy season. If they had a basketball team, I would buy season tickets right there in the front for me and my son.
I think you're in the minority.
I would buy season. I would be there every
push
night.
Push comes to shove.
No
for
pun
me,
intended.
I would take hoops over baseball.
Yeah, I would be there every night.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll get to the big finish. Also, if you got a call on baseball to Nashville, we'll squeeze in a phone call or two as well. 615-737-1025.
Oh, the channels were flipping this weekend at my house. There was so much hoops going on. Then we had the Preds. Then we had pro football on Sunday. I had a lot of stuff I had to record, and that means the DVR system from Xfinity. And the Xfinity DVR system, I'm telling you guys, I got 3 or 4 TVs that are all hooked up to the boxes. You can pause the game. So my wife comes in last night, and she's like, do you really need to watch the end of this Patriots-Chiefs game? And I'm going, it's Tom Brady versus Mahomes, honey. I've got to finish the game. She goes, you can finish it in the other room. I said, all right. I pause it on my Xfinity, my DVR system there. You pause it. You walk into the other room. It's all connected. All your TVs are connected. I pick it up right where I left off. I didn't miss a single play when I had to change rooms on Saturday night for the Preds game because I wanted to change the channel because they were not playing well. And then on Sunday, I had to watch the end of the game, so I changed the I went to the other room, and it was fine. This is what Xfinity gives you. Along with the Wi-Fi, along with the voice remote, the recommendations, all the great stuff, they keep all your DVR content organized and collected in one place with the X1 system. So check them out, 1-800-XFINITY. That's Xfinity.com, or pop into an Xfinity store today for more details.
All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game. Time for the big finish. Hey, don't forget, coming up top of the hour, it will not be Willie and Darren. They've got Preds obligations because the Preds get underway today. Puck drop at 2 o'clock against the Avalanche. The pregame gets started at 1, so Willie and Darren will be handling that, which means you get Jared and Floyd, Jared and the GM, 4 hours earlier than normal. So they'll take you from 10 to 1 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
If you were not awake at the end of our show, you'll be awake in the next 15 minutes.
You will be.
Oh, yeah, you will. Jared and the GM.
I was just thinking about this quickly before we get to the big finish. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about, you know, ways to kind of get the Preds going, ignite them so they don't fall behind one zip like they have for the last five games.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned Stillman and this vision. I'm a weird guy. I admit that.
Yeah, you
this
are.
We're all weird.
Just popped into my head.
You're more weird than us.
You remember the scene of Rudy when Rudy goes into the Notre Dame locker room and he imitates Newt Rockne and he puts the little bench and he stands up on the bench
Did that really happen?
It could have been embellishment.
It's a documentary. Rudy's a documentary.
Could the Preds use?
It's nonfiction.
Could the Preds use Jared Stillman in the locker room pregame, standing on a stool, demanding excellence?
I think somebody would throw pucks at him.
I was going to say I would like all the Predators to not get kicked out of the game.
Exactly
for fighting.
He would make them angry, extremely angry.
Maybe that's what they need.
Yeah, maybe that's what they need.
Yeah. Let's get to the big finish. Here's the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive, off and running here on a Monday. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nikhail Braden-Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you. So for the next 2 weeks, do we get a bunch of like former Rams going on shows saying,
oh, yeah,
we were robbed 17 years ago, Spygate?
Nah.
Yes.
Yeah, but no.
Marshall Faulk's in the media, Kurt Warner's in the media.
Y'all had a chance to win that game. Y'all were the highest scoring offense in the National Football League that year.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all got reduced to what, like 20 points somewhere around there?
Yeah, because the Patriots were watching their practice.
Yeah, it's their fault.
Obviously, Derek.
They should have concealed it a little bit better.
And Brady's balls were deflated.
Yeah. you can't play with deflated balls, man.
I mean,
you just can't do it.
Well, he had 203 left last night when he got the ball back, and they were properly inflated.
Yeah, and when he got the ball back, I'm like 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's mm-hmm. a little bit too long.
You're going to be on that trip.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on that trip, and I promise not to big time anyone. Mm. So it'll be good.
Yes, We have a lot of Constable nuggets to get to later in the show today. You know, he was at the gym this weekend. He was big time.
That
people.
Was the funniest thing.
He went heavy product at Braden's house yesterday.
Hey,
a lot to get to.
No,
amount of product in that guy's hair.
You said that. You must be texting us from heaven.
Yeah.
I die laughing.
So, yeah, let's actually.
I die laughing.
Let's get this.
Chase went to the gym once and died.
Let's see if we can do this in like 90 seconds. So, Constable sends us a text. Myself, Braden, Derek. This was Saturday. Just got done at the gym. And my response was, oh, you must be texting us from heaven because you've got to be dead.
Oh, man, I fell out reading that text.
Why are you laughing at Chase so much there?
It was funny. That text was just funny because Chase is not getting back in the gym room.
A little constable cardio.
So this is the McCabe makeover.
Darren looks at me Saturday night at the Preds game, and he goes, be honest with me. First time ever in the gym? I'm like, no. And he goes, no, really. First time ever in the gym.
So what did you do? Like, what did you do? Treadmill, elliptical?
No, I did upper body. My friend that's a certified trainer wrote me out a good beginner's workout. And
so you're changing from going to the mall at 9 a.m. and doing laps?
Yes. Okay. Yes. You know,
that was the old workout.
I bet not ever see you.
I'm sorry to Arthur and Gertrude that I won't be able to walk the mall with them.
I mean, your shoes are all black. I mean, you wear the shoes that look like the old people's shoes sometimes.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, you know, I was like,
hey. Old Floyd's got some of those shoes.
Well, this is this is part of the Constable makeover, right?
Yeah. It is. It's a new year, new me.
So right. I like it, Chase.
Good for you.
I like it.
The McCabe makeover's underway.
But that was funny.
Hey, Braden, just to correct you real quick, Kentucky, it's not that they didn't get off the bus. They were just, you know, intimidated by my singing of Rocky Top.
Yes.
So that's what it was.
That's true.
You get a constable with a few cocktails back to the end zone.
But that was like third quarter constable.
Yeah, but they knew.
What's their excuse in the first half?
They knew.
Oh, they knew it was coming?
They felt it, yeah.
That's true. For those who have no idea what we're talking about, the constable, by the way, took off his constable hat for that game. And
I need to find that.
Participated in a few libations and then proceeded to scream Rocky Top at the top of his lungs in the end zone of Neyland Stadium.
All right, let's get
scaring
to...
Scaring all of Kentucky's football players.
Hey, man, you see a guy 6'4", I don't know, constable, maybe 260-ish.
Whoa!
Wearing a brown leather jacket, you know.
He's in the ballpark.
Yeah. You know, Chase could be a 3-star left tackle.
I realized this weekend that I've actually lost weight. So
yes,
you're like a center in the MAC.
Yeah,
like you know
that'll work.
They're not huge in the MAC.
Yeah.
260, 270, small offensive line.
It's all about leverage, though, right?
Yeah.
You got to get your hands in the right position.
Yeah.
All right, Pete Weber at the bottom of the hour, and also speaking of Vols basketball, Sonny Dykes did the game on Saturday, Bama in Tennessee.
Jimmy Dykes.
What did I say?
Sonny Dykes, former Cal head football coach.
Well, that would be an interesting booth.
Yeah.
Bringing Sonny Dykes.
He just got back to the to head coaching in
Dykes.
Texas, right?
Why are you looking at me? Why would I know that?
Where's he at?
You're the college football guy.
Jimmy Dykes.
Go to break.
9 o'clock tomorrow. Not today. Tomorrow, Jimmy Dykes, who did the game for ESPN.
He's on a rim run.
He did the Vols Bama game.
Get to the nail. 50-50 balls.
We'll talk to him tomorrow at 9. We'll get back to the Preds, and we're just going to take a break. Joining us now is the great Pete Weber, voice of your Preds, who will be on the call.
I think the biggest thing really is the length of the schedule. It's difficult to do that for all 82 games, and you need the reminders every now and then. That's the only thing I can figure out from all of this. None of it is easy to figure out. And I know I'm playing a psychologist on radio right now, but I think that's pretty much the case.
Are you staying at a Holiday Inn? If you are, then you can do it.
If I were right now, I'd be a heck of a lot smarter. I'd be able to give you much more complete answers. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
Chase has been very, I don't know if he's like a zen. He's in a very zen state of mind right now. He's been tweeting all these like next level thoughts this morning. And he said, I look forward to, this was 4 minutes ago. I look forward to inspiring the people of Nashville with Stick to Sports next on Morning Drive. I'm going to preach the power of positivity, and hopefully Nick, Braden, and Derek will listen. Be well.
Well, that would require us to listen to you, constables, or Stick to Sports. Wasn't there another one earlier this morning, Chaser, that you threw out there? Today, quote, constable, today is the start of a new week and a new opportunity to better yourself. That's my plan. Hope you all have a fantastic day and week. Deep thoughts from Jack Constable. Every day, I don't need a calendar to like flip the day and get my little inspirational note. I just check out the Constable's Twitter account, at Chase on Game.
I'm here to inspire.
This could be a career transition from radio extraordinaire to like motivational speaker. This could be like Matt Foley all over again. Do you live in a van down by the river?
I don't.
Okay.
You guys remember the Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy?
Oh, yes.
Was that Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
It's the Morning Drive Daily Rewind here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. And that's
it's amazing the difference an hour can make, you know, in my mood.
All right. That's going to do it. We're out of time. No chance for what we learned today. No chance for On Tap tonight. But coming up at 2 o'clock today, Preds in the Avalanche. And coming up next, special edition of Jared and the GM. They'll lead you right into Darren McFarland, who's got pregame duties.
Bailey, DJ, Nashville. I love you.